Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! The heavyweight champion is taking the mandatory 8-count, and Foreman is as poised as can be.
Let's get it started in here.
There's no disrespect, so when I bust my rhyme, you break your neck. We got 5 minutes for us to disconnect.
All the bandits out on the field.
Break away from tradition, because when we be out, girl, it's fully be that.
Smith, caution. Running right down the line.
Pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo.
Good! Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started. In here. Let's get it started. Ha! Let's get it started. In here. Let's get it started.
What's up, everybody? This is Roz and Wick, your Sporting Edge. We're back here at LibertyTalk.fm, and we've got some very exciting news as we are going to be talking some NFL offseason to start today off. And we're going to start off with the big money, the big news. We're going to go with Eric Berry, who just signed a six-year, $78 million deal with the Kansas City Chiefs, $40 million of it guaranteed, and a $20 million signing bonus, which that makes him the highest-paid defensive back in the NFL now, and I believe it's well-deserved.
I do, too. I mean, Eric Berry is, you know, an awesome player, and not only an awesome player, but he has a great story to go along with it. I mean, he's a cancer survivor. And he really means a lot to this Chiefs team, I think, outside of what he does on the field. And I think it's totally worth it. I mean, this Chiefs defense was the main reason they got so far this year. And the game they got knocked out in, I mean, they didn't give up a touchdown. I mean, that's pretty good. I know they lost 18-16, but, you know, Eric Berry, I think, is one of the premier safeties in the league. He's always been a great player, and I think this money is well-deserved. And I think this Chiefs team, I mean, they're a team to constantly look out for. And I think, you know, keeping Eric Berry was definitely the right decision. I know they've got some other tough decisions they're going to have to make, guys like Justin Houston, guys like Dontari Poe. I mean, it's not going to be easy to keep all those guys together, but I think Eric Berry is, you know, the center and the key piece of that defense. So I think it was a necessary move for them.
Absolutely, and especially with the cornerback market constantly growing. And speaking about this cornerback market, there was some big news early in the week about Darrell Revis being cut by the Jets. He's only 32 years old. You can look at that as being a little bit old for the NFL, but I thought it was an early cut. I know he has some misdemeanors and some felonies going on right now. But
just a couple misdemeanors and felonies. It's no big deal. Just a walk in the park.
All alleged. None have been really put to test yet. He's not in jail. I think he's still valuable to any team he goes to. I would relate this situation to a little bit like a Charles Woodson minus the crime. Charles Woodson was never one to commit crime, but didn't go back to the Oakland Raiders. He was a free agent, and then he had the opportunity to join the Green Bay Packers and become NFL Defensive Player of the Year. Like I said, Revis is 32 years old. I still think there's some game left in him. I know Eric Berry just got that massive contract we were just talking about. Where's the money with Revis? Where do you believe he finds himself going this year?
Well, I mean, obviously he's not one of the premier cornerbacks in the league anymore. That's for certain. I mean, the man is an old man now, but I honestly believe he has more than a little bit left in the tank. I think a lot of the situation had to do with the fact that the Jets just the entire year were a dysfunctional team. And, I mean, this is a guy who wants to win. And, I'm not saying I warrant, and I'm not calling him out for effort. I know, but he had a crappy season. I mean, rankings-wise, grade-wise, he always graded out near the top, you know, corners in the league. And this year he was brutal, but I got to think he's got something left. I think he needs to go to a contender. I don't think he's going to stick around to play with a team like the Jets because, you know, he's too old and has spent too much time in this league, you know, to go 4-12 every year. So I think a team that picks him up is going to get a steal because I think it's going to be hard for him to argue that his value is where I think he thinks it's going to be. But I think he's definitely a worthwhile shot for a team, you know, to take a flyer on. I mean, perfect example, you know, a guy like a Chris Long. Patriots, you know, signed him to a one-year deal, was a key part of that rotation and that defense. They ended up winning a Super Bowl. I mean, I think Darrell Revis is a piece that he can add to a team that's a contender and possibly bring them to the next level. I think if he goes to a contender, the effort is going to be much better, and I think he's going to perform well. Do I think he's the same cornerback he was 6 years ago? No. But, I mean, this guy at one point was the best cornerback in the league by far, and I think he's still got some left in the tank.
No, absolutely. And it's actually funny you said that. So the Chris Long thing was accurate this year. And then how about the fact that the Patriots actually did take a chance on Darrelle Revis, signing him to that one-year deal, and they actually won a Super Bowl that year as well. So what are the opportunities the Patriots might go for him? I would love for Green Bay to maybe give him a chance, but there's no villains up in Green Bay. At least we try to avoid that. But yeah, like you said, there's a lot of contenders out there that I think should be take a shot with Darrelle Revis, because you're right. He needs to play on a team where they're contending for a championship each year. His years in Tampa Bay weren't as productive as we once thought he could be. His year with the Jets last year wasn't very star-studded. So we're hoping
It was shit, let's be honest.
It wasn't very good. I mean, I didn't hear Revis' name once on any NFL talk show.
I heard him a lot for saying he was grading out near the bottom of cornerbacks in the league.
That's pretty rough to hear. But we're going to move on from the defensive side of the ball as an offense in Pittsburgh that is now solidified for the long term. Antonio Brown just receiving the largest wide receiver contract, as he'll be averaging $17 million a year. That puts him ahead of the likes of A.J. Green, who's making an average of $15 million a year, and Julio Jones, who's averaging $14.2 million a year. So Brown in for 4 years. I think that's an absolutely great deal for the Steelers after the little bit of scuffle they had with him in the postseason. Not to mention they also put a franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell, who I think is the most dynamic running back, dynamic offensive player.
Yeah, I've got a question. I've always been a little bit confused by the franchise tag and what it means for a player. I've heard a lot of players don't like it, but can you explain to me a little bit, you know, why the Steelers would put the franchise tag on Le'Veon Bell, and just in general what it means for all our listeners out there?
Absolutely. So the franchise tag is to maintain the rights of a player for another year. But what the NFLPA has been able to do to make sure that the players, although it's still a bad deal, and I'll explain why in a second, is that whatever a value of a position is, that's how much money they'll get. So a quarterback right now, if they were to be franchise tag, in the most recent case being Kirk Cousins, who's now going to make $26 million because of this tag for 1 year, it's based on the value of the position, and that's how much money they'll make, and it gives them a one-year deal. And usually it doesn't hurt the cap as much, because you're not paying somebody over like Eric Berry, who's now the highest paid cornerback in the league. Le'Veon Bell will not be the highest paid running back this year. So they're putting the franchise tag on him because they don't want to go with a long-term deal quite yet. They feel it's a safe play to just have him for another year. And where this is terrible for the NFL players is now Le'Veon Bell, who's tagged for 1 year, does not have a long-term deal in place. The team does have the opportunity to make a long-term deal with Le'Veon Bell, obviously, over the course of this season. But it's another year where there's a risk of injury again. There's a risk that his play won't match what we're expecting from him. And that way, his market goes down come the following year when he's in free agency again. And again, we just saw with Kirk Cousins, you can be franchise tagged multiple years in a row. And if you're fortunate enough to get franchise tagged 6 years in a row, that's basically a contract that most people would actually want. But that's very unlikely, not usually the case. So most players try to avoid the whole franchise tag aspect of everything. But since Le'Veon Bell, I think, is so much in his prime, and maybe he's not even there yet, he's just about to reach that, he'll be fine. He'll enter free agency next offseason, and hopefully the Steelers will fork up some cash for him to keep that offense explosive in years to come.
Yeah, well, I mean, I love the deals too. I mean, those are two of the most dynamic offensive players in the league. The one thing I worry about with the Steelers, though, is how much longer does Ben Roethlisberger continue to suit up for them? Because I think we could both agree that without him, you know, that offense doesn't click. I mean, if Landry Jones steps into his place, you know, the value of Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, you know, decreased almost tenfold. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, say what you want about the guy, has been, I think, a major key to the success of both Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. But that's all the time we have here, talking a little bit NFL. We got some college basketball coming up. We got some NBA. A little low period before the tournament, but we're going to get to all that good stuff. If you miss a show, you know where to find us, libertytalk.fm, and we will be back after the break, everybody.
And we're back, everybody, here at the Sporting Edge with Roz and Witz. Witz, I'm sitting in a beautiful new office today, as I once again am on the road. I'm back in Deerfield, Illinois, where we've been born and raised and everything. I'm very excited to be here. It looks pretty nice out. The sun is finally shining. The snow has finally stopped. But back to your Pittsburgh Steelers talk about Landry Jones joining or hopping in after Ben Roethlisberger's tenure. Yeah, that would be a little bit of a struggle for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I'm actually interested because we always say that how important the quarterback is to a position player such as a running back or a wide, especially a wide receiver. I really think Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown are so superior at their position that they make maybe Landry Jones better. And I know there's a lot of room to disagree with that, Xander, but I think it's something to consider.
Absolutely is.
Absolutely. And I know you have the other side of it, but I really think that Le'Veon Bell takes a lot of pressure that many of these young quarterbacks have when they first get in there. He takes it off of Landry Jones. And I think Antonio Brown is just one of those spectacular options to go after, especially when they have Martavius Bryant back and Wheaton also being able to be deep threats. So there's a lot going on with that offense that I think would make Landry Jones pretty successful. Obviously not a high caliber level Super Bowl, but that's what the drafts are for, and maybe even a free agency. But I think you get a good year still with Landry Jones at the helm. Again, we're talking in the future here because Ben Roethlisberger is still with the Steelers, and I'm projecting another good 2 years from him. And while we're on the Steelers, because, which we love this guy, we think he's a hard worker, he's a grinder, he's getting up there in age, and we were talking about this earlier in the actual NFL season, Jerome Harrison, or James Harrison, I apologize.
Just, how dare you disrespect him?
After I just hyped him up and everything, the just blatant disrespect I had. James Harrison, the magnificent superstar, just signed a 2-year deal worth $3.5 million, so he's back on the field. He's going to be terrorizing quarterbacks for the next 2 years in the NFL and with the Steelers. I think there's no better sight than James Harrison in the Steelers jersey. It was tough to watch him in Cincinnati for that short period of time, but he looks good in the black and yellow. How are you feeling about this tough guy, Witz?
I mean, he is one of the most inspirational stories, I think, in the NFL, just in terms of like just being an old guy and coming back. I mean, James Harrison was the best defensive player in the NFL when I was in sixth grade. That was almost a decade ago, and he's still killing it. I mean, obviously he's not, you know, the MVP of the league, defensive MVP like he used to be, but I mean, he's still a very productive outside linebacker, a really important part to the Steelers team. I think he knows what it takes to win. He has won a Super Bowl before, and you know, whenever they do specials and stories about him, I mean, he seems like he's a real team guy. I mean, and he's scary. I mean, he's one of the scariest looking guys, I think, in the league. You know, just absolutely stacked, jacked up, bald, mustache, coming to get you. He's the kind of guy I would not want to see across the line as a quarterback.
He makes bald look good again.
But, I mean, he is one that I would – I mean, he gives me nightmares still. And I know I'll never play against him. But I remember I saw him doing a push-up once in a video with Marquise Pouncey on his back. The guy's like 330 pounds, and it was unbelievable.
That's nothing. Tell me when he got somebody above 400 pounds on his back. I mean, that's my daily routine.
Oh, stop. You can't even do 10 push-ups with free weight.
That's probably true. I'm pretty much a Sally.
You're pushing like 250, I heard.
Yeah, well,
that's what all the ladies of Dayton told me.
Yeah, the ladies are taking the shots where they can take the shots. It's well-deserved after 4 years there. But since you're ripping me, I might as well come back at you, since I know how much you love your Chicago Bears. We've got some fantastic news on their front. They are not franchise tagging Alshon Jeffrey, which has in effect led Alshon Jeffrey to say this quote, that he is looking to go play for, or wants to go play for, a contender. I'm thinking he's going to be a future Patriot or potentially go out west to a team that's doing well, maybe even Seattle, give Russell Wilson maybe another option other than Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham. Alshon's going to leave. He promised a Super Bowl title. I guess it's not for the Chicago Bears. And then to add insult to injury, we just found out on Thursday, Adam Schefter said that Jimmy Garoppolo has been removed from the trading block. The Patriots will be holding on to Jimmy Garoppolo for another year. They do not look to trade him. And the Bears were the front runners in terms of reaching out to the Patriots and wanting to strike a deal for Garoppolo. So tell me how we're feeling. What is it going to be like next year for the Chicago Bears? And are they going to win more games than the Browns or vice versa?
That's a good question. Well, first of all, I want to say I've never been the biggest Bears fan. I've always been a huge fantasy football fan, but I do like my Bears. I think they are going to win more games than the Browns last year. I honestly don't know who's going to be starting at quarterback, but I think the Browns are farther away than the Bears are, and that's not to say that they're anywhere near where they need to be, but, I mean, the Browns were absolutely atrocious this year. I think they could be headed in the right direction. I mean, it's tough to play with five different quarterbacks, but I think that defense is going to be the key to the future for that team. But, you know, talking about the Bears, you know, quarterback, if you don't have one, you're not really going anywhere. And I think, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo is now the greatest insurance policy in the NFL, and he happens to play for the best team, you know. Best of both worlds for Bill Belichick. And I understand why they wouldn't want to trade him. I mean, I think they could get some immense value for him. But, you know, I don't know if a team like the Bears is even a quarterback away, or a team like the Browns is a quarterback away from being good. And that's not to say they shouldn't go out and get him, but, I mean, people do say one of the most important positions in the NFL is the backup quarterback. And, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, I think he's young. I think he's still developing. And I think there's still a chance, you know, in the near future. I don't know how much longer Tom Brady's going to play. I mean, he seems like he could play for another decade, but, you know, things can happen. I mean, the guy is almost 40 years old. If he's not there already, I'm not exactly sure. So if Jimmy Garoppolo could, you know, be a guy who's in the system for a long time, reminds me of one of your favorite players in Aaron Rodgers, a guy who
absolutely,
you know, was behind Brett Favre for, I think, four years. Or something like that.
A nice four-year period.
And you know what? It worked out pretty splendidly because Aaron Rodgers, I think, is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL now. And, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo,
absolutely,
I can see him possibly making this transition later in his career for the Patriots because, I mean, developing a quarterback and finding a good one is probably the hardest thing to do in the league.
That's fair. And I got a quick question back since we're talking about the Bears. Hoyer or Barkley, who do you want to see behind the center, underneath the center?
100% Barkley. Brian Hoyer. You know, he's okay, but he's a career backup. I would love to see what Matt Barkley can do. I thought he showed some spurts at the end of the year for the Bears.
Threw a lot of interceptions.
Yeah, he did, but I mean, there's just no reason to start Brian Hoyer. I mean, the guy, first of all, he's not young. Second of all, he's not good. And third of all, he's never really had great success in the league, whereas Matt Barkley, on the other hand, is a lot younger. Showed some spurts at the end of the year. I mean, I think to start Brian Hoyer would kind of just be throwing the season away. I'm not really getting anything out of it. I mean, you know, he's a backup quarterback. That's what he's always been, and that's what he's proved on the field when he's had enough time to show us that he should be a backup.
Okay, so we have Matt Barkley starting for you, and then the next question is, who's playing wide receiver for you next year? Is Kevin White going to finally turn out to be the draft pick you guys were expecting?
I don't know. I mean, he's turning into like the Joel Embiid of the NFL. I don't know if this guy is ever going to see the light of day on the field. I mean, I remember when they drafted him, you know, he was fast, big, tall, great receiver, but I mean, it's hard to showcase your talents when you're always injured. So I really have no opinion on him because I haven't seen him play enough. And, you know, this Bears team, we're definitely headed in the wrong direction. So, you know, maybe we trade him too, but I don't really know if he has any value right now.
No, absolutely. I think his value is slim to none. But actually, I was thinking in the midst of you speaking, because I was talking about these contenders that Alshon Jeffrey could go to. I know Indianapolis has a lot of problems going on outside of their offense. It's more of their defense where we see this struggle. But what do you think about Alshon Jeffrey in an Indianapolis Colts uniform? Across from T.Y. Hilton.
I don't think anything of it.
What do you mean? Andrew Luck. You know, I think Andrew Luck's the most underrated. I know he was overrated, but I think he's the underrated quarterback now because I still think he's that superstar in Indianapolis. But that defense is just so atrocious that I think they have a good draft, also have a good free agency, picking up some defensive players. I think this defense, even at a mild like growth, would be fantastic for Andrew Luck, and I think that makes them instantly a contender again. I mean, he went 11-5 before, and he's been to the playoffs. So I think at Alshon Jeffrey,
I totally agree with you. I just don't think Alshon Jeffrey goes there. I mean, they've got T.Y. Hilton, they've got Dante Moncrief, and they got Philip Dorsett. I think that's a great tandem of wide receivers, and they've also got what's the tight end's name? Jack something.
There's also Dwayne Allen there.
And Dwayne Allen. I mean, they've got some pieces. I don't think they go after Alshon Jeffrey. I don't think they need him right now. And I think he ends up somewhere else. I don't know where, but it's going to be somewhere else.
That's completely fair, and I respect your opinion, but we got to help out Indianapolis wherever we can. So that's all the time we have this segment, everybody. You know where to find us. We're at libertytalk.fm. This is a Sporting Edge with Wits and Raj. Please feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at RajForRaj or at ZandyBoy13. We'll be back after the break. Thank you very much.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Roz and Witz here at the Sporting Edge, and we're bringing you a new segment today. We're going to hop into NCAA basketball. I know we just had a whole NFL segment right before this, but we brought this new segment. It's called Make or Miss. So we're in the best month of the year for college basketball, everybody. It's undeniable.
I never miss.
And Witz claims he never misses, but wait till he hears the topics, and I think he'll be reconsidering that. But we're in the best month of college basketball. Conference championships are right around the corner, actually starting within the next week. And then we have the big, the fantastic March Madness tournament that I am super excited for and think it's going to be the best year for it. I don't think anybody's going to come close to a perfect bracket. But along the way, we're going to get tons of buzzer beaters. So, Witz, the objective of this segment right here is I'm going to give you five 2016-2017 buzzer beaters that happened this year that I'm going to see, would you make it if you were in that position? And then, of course, I have to, for the history buffs, I have to go back in time and get some of the best buzzer beaters in NCAA basketball history. So on Wednesday, the beginning of March, the best way you could start the month of March, Northwestern hit probably the most crucial shot in their program's history, a nice little buzzer beater at the end. And I'm going to set this up for you, Witz, and you have to tell me, is it a make or a miss on your part? Say you're the player in the situation.
So I have the same shooting abilities that I currently have?
Yes, but maybe the adrenaline kicks in, Xander. We're hoping maybe that you can make some of these. I picked some buzzer beaters I think you can make. So Derek Pardon received the pass, a full court pass over a defender. It was almost quarterback to wide receiver-esque, and the pass actually led Pardon towards the hoop for a layup at the buzzer. No time left on the clock. So Xander, would you be able to make the catch over the defender in stride and lay in the bucket for the buzzer beater?
I think this one is very makeable for me. I mean, I'm a lefty. I probably wouldn't have gone up with two hands. Maybe a little, I would catch it, a little floater off the glass. I mean, that's one of my favorite shots. I have the chance to take it in a game, which is about once a game. I usually make it. So, you know, I can't jump very high. So if this, you know, if the defender happened to touch the ball, I'd be screwed. But if I could catch that ball, turn around, hit a little lefty floater, very makeable shot for me.
So we're one for one on the makes. Perfect. That's what I like to hear. Now we're going to give you a history one. All right. This one goes back to 2010 in the Big Ten quarterfinals, where it's OSU versus Michigan. So enough said there, Xander. Like, you are freaking out. This is a huge, huge rivalry matchup in the Big Ten conference game. Both teams needing the win to help out their tournament resume, and it's Evan Turner's turn. So Evan Turner receives the ball on the inbound. He passes it off, takes the ball back, just a little past midcourt, pulls up for what seems to be a half-court shot and drills the shot for the win. Nice three-pointer, put them up on Michigan, game over, beat your rivals. Witz, are you hitting this half-court shot?
Absolutely not. I don't think I would come close. You know, I've got very little touch, and that's why I was never very good at basketball. So I'm going to say this is a for-sure miss for me.
Wow, so we got a quick miss on the board. So maybe he's more of a 2016-2017 guy. I don't think history plays Witz very well. That wasn't his strongest subject in high school anyways. But
Look who's talking over there.
I know, by the dad who's a history teacher, so keep that in mind. Stay woke. So, our another 2016-2017 fantastic game, January 29th of this year, Nova, who's number one in the country, versus number 12, Virginia, who's leading most of the game. So, a nice top 25 matchup gives us a little bit of insight into what's going to happen in the NCAA tournament. The shots made by Dante DiVincenzo, hard name, we're going with the Italians here, but it starts with a Josh Hart drive. Time expiring, Hart wants to be the game winner, or get the game winner, be the hero for Nova. But what happens is he missed the layup, very short, so it goes off the rim with 0.8 seconds. Xander, keep this in mind. DiVincenzo goes in with a tip buzzer beater. A nice little tip, little tap. Can you tap in this buzzer beater?
I would honestly say no. This is another one of my weak points, is not only getting off the ground, but having enough foresight and touch to put the ball in the cylinder. This is not my strength. Had I been there in real life, you know, I think you would have struggled to put a piece of paper under my 2 feet. So I'm going to say this is another miss for me, a 1 for 3. Probably still above my career shooting percentage, so I'm not going to be too upset about it.
Perfect. And now we're going to bring you into one of the most iconic shots of all time, that Xander. It's not that far away from the rim. So I think you have an opportunity to make this shot. Just okay. Hear me out. People, Sports Edge fans, you know where I'm going with this. 1992, it's the Elite Eight between the two blue teams, Kentucky and Duke. And we get a nice long inbound pass to a man named Christian Laettner, who takes one fake dribble to the right, turns back to his left, and pulls up from the free throw line for the most epic buzzer beater in Duke history. And we see it today. Xander, can you make a free throw line jumper for the win?
Yes, this is actually one of my favorite shots on the court, especially to the right, center right, and I'm a lefty, so I love getting that little fade to the left side of the rim. One of my favorite shots. I've actually made a couple of those, and the baseline jumper is also one of my favorites, but I think this is a shot. Had I been able to catch the ball and pull off a little fake, create some room, I think definitely a makeable shot for me.
That's what I love to hear, and I love that we're at 2 for 4, so we're at 50%. I mean, I'd be at 100%. Just keep that in mind.
Pay a lot of money to see me shoot 50%.
No, I know, and people pay to see me shoot 100. So we're perfect here so far. We're going back. This is your Kansas team who you're hyping up. They have a big week ahead of them. Just need some W's just to maintain this number one ranked position. But earlier in the year, January 13th, 2017, just another conference game against a rival KSU, Kansas State University. It came down to the last shot. Kansas State tied it up, and I'm going to botch this guy's name again because I had it earlier. Keep that in mind. But McKeelu takes the ball the entire length of the court, Xander. So this is you running. You're getting the ball, basically inbounded you, and you're going 92 feet. And he runs.
Scary thought.
He runs the entire length of the court, jumps to the side around a defender for a nice little finger roll layup. So it's not a dunk. He's not super close to the rim, but a nice little finger roll effort. Are you hitting the shot, Wits?
I think I could hit this shot. My problem is
even with the running,
the running down the court combined with the dribbling and evading defenders is where I would struggle. So you know, if we happen to get through that, a finger roll is my specialty. I can only shoot layups with my left hand, and it's usually by method of the finger roll. So I'll give me that one, assuming I can get past 90 feet of 5-man defense.
Perfect, and I'm gonna. We know, just give me a quick hit or miss on the, or make or miss on this one. We know the Jimmy Valvano, I'm going to say you're missing this because you can't dunk a basketball, but we all know the NC State win over Houston where Lorenzo Charles caught that apparent air ball by Wittenberg and dunked it in for the buzzer beater. I'm going to say you can't make that shot, so we don't even need to go over it, but it was one of the greatest NCAA championship games of all time, and I don't believe you're making that shot.
I'm not, but I absolutely agree with you. It was one of the greatest moments, I think, in NCAA basketball history. Jim Valvano, the whole thing, the missed shot, the putback, it was awesome.
It was fantastic. But it leads me to another historical game, which many people don't believe is historical. But in 2008, we're getting into March Madness brackets and everything, and we love seeing the upsets. It's tough picking them, but Ethan picked his first ever upset that year. I can remember this like it's the back of my hand. Western Kentucky, the 12 seed, beats number 5 Drake in the NCAA tournament on a buzzer beater, Wits. And this is going to test your range. At the end of the game, Ty Rogers receives a slingshot pass and instantly has to pull up over 2 defenders to hit a 3-pointer to win the game over Drake, upsetting the number 5 seeded team in the tournament. Can you hit this 3-pointer with 2 people in your face, Andrew?
I remember that shot actually pretty well, and absolutely not is my answer. I wish I could say something different, but 12-5, Roz, come on. I mean, that's the staple of every year in the NCAA tournament.
You still have to pick it right, Xander. You still have to pick it right, and people struggle with that. So I'm very happy.
A little credit.
That was a year of Davidson. That was a year of Siena. That was a year of many 13s beating 4. It was a wild – 2008 was probably the best March Madness tournament of all time. And we're talking about that because we're hoping that this year, 2017, is going to offer something very similar to that. But we're going to go back to 2017 and a game that broke my heart, the viewers on – or the listeners on this show – know how much this hurt me deep down inside. It's Oregon versus UCLA back in December, the 29th, and Dylan Brooks off a Bryce Alford missed free throw, which is the most ridiculous thing you can say. A Bryce Alford missed free throw. The guy is 100% from there, you would assume. He takes the ball, passes it really quick. His teammate's like, nope, don't want this ball. Hands it back to Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks drives up the court, staring straight at Lonzo Ball, who sticks up that long, lengthy arm, ready to block this 3. No time left on the clock. The ball's over Ball's hand. That's weird to say. Trust me, say that 10 times fast. And the ball sinks into the net, and Oregon beats my beloved UCLA Bruins for their first loss of the season. do you hit that three over ball?
I think I got a shot. I mean, I can chuck up shots too that don't usually go in. But I remember we were all sitting together in Dylan's living room when that happened. And like you said, I mean, huge spread in that game too. The 2 points with the Alford missed free throw, it was enormous. So I mean, Dylan Brooks, that was a great shot. I mean, and that's why he's one of the best players in the NCAAs this year.
Absolutely, and that's all that we've got in terms of the make or miss. Xander, you sounded pretty confident in your ability to play a little bit of basketball in clutch time. You are pretty clutch. I'm going to give that one to you. But I thank you, Sporting Edge listeners, as we give you some rundowns of the greatness of March and the greatness of college basketball. As we are very close, we're going to be talking conference basketball next week, as well as starting to get into March Madness. Mike Surface will be joining us. But that's all the time we have this segment, everybody. You know where to find us at libertytalk.fm. This is Roz and Witz. We are happy you're our listeners, and we'll be back next segment. Welcome back, everybody. We're here at Sporting Edge with Witz and Roz, and we just ran through our fun little NCAA segment that I hope brought back some of the greatest March memories to our viewers, our listeners. I keep mixing you guys up. I understand this is an audio podcast, not a live podcast. So we're going to break down some NBA right now. Not too much changing except for some massive, massive news involving the Golden State Warriors, where we've recently learned that Kevin Durant will be out at least 4 weeks, Xander. I know, again, this has been a show where I preach the importance of not paying attention to the regular season and just focusing on the postseason. So we know Kevin Durant will be back in time to participate in the postseason. But as your first year with the Golden State Warriors, maybe a little chemistry lost here while you're hurt. Not bad chemistry, like, oh, you're a jerk for not playing, but a little bit of working together like a team. They don't get the opportunity to kind of finish off the season with a strong finish, so that they're ready for the playoffs. What do you think about this injury?
You know what? I'm in between. I don't think it's a huge deal. And mainly, I think the main guy I'm looking at now is Steph Curry. I think, you know, he's taking a little bit of a backseat to Kevin Durant, which nothing against him. I mean, Kevin Durant, I think, you know, talent-wise, I think I could make an argument that he's the best player in the NBA. I'll definitely put him in the top five. So I agree with you. The chemistry part is probably the biggest thing here. We know that Golden State is going to make the playoffs. The one seed possibly could be a little bit in jeopardy. They're a few games up on the Spurs right now and about 8 games up on the Rockets. But I have no doubt that Steph Curry is going to step into the place that he used to be in and take over this team again. I don't worry about it from that point. I think they've gotten some valuable experience together. And all those people who worried about them at the start of the year, I mean, they're, you know, 50-10, a ridiculous record again. And, you know, the only thing that this hurts is just the chemistry. And you kind of build that throughout the entire season. But I think they're going to be fine. And I think as long as KD is healthy, I think they've played enough games together where this will not affect them down the stretch. But, I mean, they say 4 weeks, but you know what? You never really know until he's back on the court. And that's kind of any kind of injury. You can quote, you can have timetables, but until all 5 of them are back and he plays a few games without getting hurt again, I think you got to assume the worst. And, you know, I think they got some good news because a lot of people feared that he might be out for the season. But when you look at this Golden State team, it's essentially the same one that they had last year. I mean, I know they've let a couple people go, but they still got that main trio of Green, Curry, Thompson. They still got Andre Iguodala. So I think they're going to be fine. The only thing that they're losing is, I think, you know, some valuable time they've got together. But we're 60 games in, so, you know, that time has kind of passed.
Absolutely. And I think injuries really are plaguing. And I know we're out of the NFL season, so it's been a little bit of time for us. But injuries are very frequent in the NFL. But this year in the NBA also, the injuries have just been piling up. Some severe season-ending ones, some just long-term, hopefully they're back for the postseason one. We talked about Kevin Love.
Yeah, dude, how about Joel Embiid?
That's who I was about to bring up. Embiid played 31 games this year, and they're trying to make the argument about him still being Rookie of the Year this year. I think if you don't even play half the season, you can't even be considered for Rookie of the Year. But Embiid out again, and he can't stay healthy. He can't stay on the court, and they just got rid of Nerlens Noel. So what's going on here? Is Embiid the future still? Or is he the next Greg Oden?
I don't think you can say that anymore.
I don't think so either.
It was hard to say after the draft. The 76ers, it's almost mind-boggling.
They're the Cleveland Browns of the NBA.
You know, they take a guy who's injured, didn't play for a couple years, came back, was electric, and now he's hurt again. They get rid of a guy who I thought they were going to keep Noel. I thought they were going to try to shop Okafor. Okafor's pretty good, but I mean, watching him play defense is, I play better defense than him, and I'm one of the worst defenders I've ever seen on a court.
That'll be a new segment. Who can you guard in the NBA? We'll start asking you players.
We're going to have to go down to like sixth grade basketball to get me some people I can guard.
There you go.
But I mean, Ben Simmons out for the year. You know what? I'm not trusting the process anymore. I didn't really trust it in the first place. And Joel Embiid made me a little bit of a believer into the season. I mean, he was playing like a legit all-star, not just a rookie. But how can you be confident in Joel Embiid and the 76ers right now with the injuries and just the injury plague? Injury riddled. Everything is injury related. I mean, the number one pick. They've had two out of the last, was it three? I think.
Yeah.
Simmons, or whatever it was. You know,
Okafor was the second pick behind. Actually, I don't know if he was the second pick. Maybe he was the first pick. But Simmons, yes, was their first pick, and Embiid was the first overall pick for them as
right.
well.
So how many teams have had two number one overall picks that didn't play their rookie season? It's just kind of like makes you shake your head. And you know what? If these guys could ever get healthy and play to their full potential, that's really scary. But I see the odds of that happening now just get less and less with the injuries piling up.
Absolutely. And then we also have Kyle Lowry, who's out in Toronto, which just makes the East even more
shitty.
I was looking for a word there. I try to keep my mouth pretty clean on this show. But
yeah, I have a dirty mouth.
I know you do. But it's easier now for LeBron James and maybe even the Boston Celtics to just head their way to the Eastern Conference Finals. But the only other news we got from the NBA that was fun this week, it was nice to see, we had LeBron and the Cavaliers playing in Boston. Something that's exciting to me, because I hope this Boston team gets another piece this offseason, because I think this would make for a nice little matchup in the Eastern Conference. But at this game was Bill Belichick, and he was sitting courtside. And LeBron James, who is notorious for running over Jason Day's girlfriend or wife during that basketball game, falling into the crowd. I mean, he's a big guy, Xander. I wouldn't want to take a hit from LeBron James.
I think he's bigger than they say he is.
I agree.
They used to say he was like 250, and a lot of people, you know, thought that he was more like 285. He's an enormous man.
Exactly. And this actually, the commentators were laughing about this too, because LeBron James, as he was tumbling towards Bill Belichick, caught himself, did not run into Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick was fine. He was safe. And after the game, they talked in the locker room, said it was like a magical moment. It's respect on both parties. Both were admiring one another. But this was brought up by the commentators, and this is why we're making this segment right now. We are going to transfer athletes right now. So we're looking for a name for this segment, but we're going to take athletes from their respective sports now, and we're going to move them to another professional league where they could be an all-star, a Hall of Famer, a Super Bowl champion. I don't know why I just picked the Super Bowl, but a professional league champion. So, Witz, I'm going to give you two guys you can pick. I'm going to pick two guys. You can take them from the MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, maybe even the hockey, tennis player, whoever you want. Move them, put them in a league where they're going to excel.
Ooh, that's a tough task. You know what? I think the first guy, you know, just thinking a superstar off the top of my head, I think Russell Westbrook would make a mean, strong safety in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's got that, you know, just that edge about him. He's just like a ball hawk, I think, you know, and he doesn't look very tall in the NBA, but, you know, he is 6'3", which is, I think, taller than most guys in the NFL when we're not looking at, you know, the offensive line. I think he'd be a mean ball hawk, a guy who just absolutely lays wood on people, similar to Eric Berry. I mean, you know, in a perfect world, if Russell Westbrook were good at football, I think he'd be similar to Barry.
That's a good pick. And my first guy, actually, we're going to stay in the Western Conference and with the NBA. I think Blake Griffin, another example of a guy who could be a tight end or a wide receiver, can jump out of a stadium, can go up and get that ball. And I think with good hands, he's a Pro Bowl tight end dash wide receiver, because he can cut some weight and be a wide receiver, I think, and he's quick, so I'm going to put Blake Griffin as my switch to the NFL also.
Okay. Hey, I've got a good one for you. Kyle Schwarber, put him at fullback like a Mike Allstott, and he's going to plow some people over, gets that knee healthy, nothing he can't do on the field. I think I would love to see the guy play football. He just looks like a meathead, and I think if you got him going at full speed, he could knock some sense into people.
Absolutely, and I'm going to go, because we're staying pretty much in the same realm, But I'm going to go a young Albert Pujols. Would have been a nice little defensive piece, maybe a linebacker. He was a thick man.
I like that.
I think Albert Pujols could have laid some wood, as you said about Russell Westbrook. I think Albert Pujols could lay a nice hit there, Xander.
I totally agree. But that's all the time that we have here for the Sporting Edge. Really enjoyed the show this week, guys. We'll be back. We got NCAA tournament coming up. We got NBA playoffs approaching closer. MLB, we're getting out of that lull period. We're starting to get into that time of the year that's a lot more exciting again without football. So that's all the time we had this week, guys. LibertyTalk.fm if you miss a show. And we will see you next week, everybody.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.